Thanks, you guys, for your patience.
I was losing patience, but
we've been here for 4 hours, so we needed a break.
As have we.
Very good.
Okay. Thank you.
All right. Good evening. We are now back in session. Just a quick reminder, please be respectful of everybody's views. Everybody gets a chance to testify. If you want to testify, please sign up over here with the council clerk. Everybody gets 3 minutes to testify. Rather than interrupting, if you really like something, you hear a thumbs up is good. If you hate something, a thumbs down is fine. That's probably the most respectful way to be registered here. And without further ado, we'll jump in. Thank you all for your patience.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor, City Council members. For the record, my name is Joanne Hardesty, and I'm the president of the NAACP Portland branch. There may be some NAACP Portland members left from the 4 hours of being here, and if they are, I would appreciate them coming to stand behind me as I speak. I have given you written testimony, and so I will deviate from my written testimony because you have it, and I believe you all have the capability of reading it. And so I want to highlight a couple of things in my time with you today. Number one, it's really demoralizing as a community member who was part of a team that invited the Department of Justice Civil Rights Division to come from Washington, D.C. to address the inequitable policing that was taking place in the city of Portland. It is disheartening to be in a place...
Joanne, could you hold on just a moment?
Folks, and the problem here apparently is the closed captioning has to call in, and for whatever reason, their system keeps going offline.
Can Commissioner Wolf still see with the people standing?
Can you maybe you go to the other side over there? And yeah. Thanks. Is that good?
Thank you.
It's bad. As I was saying, it's demoralizing to be in a room when I know why we invited the Department of Justice to come to town. So here's what you're being asked to do. You're being asked to eliminate the community's voice and the oversight of reform for Portland police officers. You are being asked to make the mayor the arbitrator of determining what appropriate community oversight of the police department would be. Now, we might like the mayor that we have now. We may not. But having one person make that decision is not oversight, especially when that person also has the role of police commissioner. You are being asked to put for lack of a more polite word, a PR group together so they can go out and sell to the community what a great, wonderful job Portland Police Bureau is doing. What you have not acknowledged is every person killed by Portland Police since the Department of Justice has been in town have been people with mental health issues. And if anybody on the city council believes that it's justified to shoot someone running away in the back, and that our grand jury process works when that happens, then you are just like living in a fantasy world. I am pretty disappointed that the DA and the police union and the Department of Justice went behind closed doors with the DA since early January, February, and came up with this crappy proposal. And then it was published on your website on Friday. Now, believe it or not, we, the community, read every word of it because, after all, we invited the DOJ because we thought they would help. We read every word. So having the Department of Justice spend an hour and 15 minutes telling us what you were going to be voting on was extremely disrespectful to people who took off from work, took off from school, and took off from their families to come down and have their voice heard. As someone who has been following this process since its inception, and two of the five of you weren't even here when we did this, I have been at every meeting about police accountability since the Department of Justice has showed up. And I can tell you what you're being asked to support is a smack in the face to community members who want accountability, who want justice, and who don't believe that someone without a weapon, and even if they have a knife, quite frankly, deserves to be killed on the streets in the city of Portland. We have a long, long way to go before we have police accountability. And this PR group that's being proposed to you is a smack in the face to community members. It is unacceptable. And in fact, the reason that you're out of compliance with the settlement agreement is because of the city's inability to actually respond when the COAB was in crisis. And it became in crisis because people decided that a free speech zone, putting people in a corner little box, was the appropriate way to have community members be able to videotape what was taking place. When you are invited to a community meeting, and then you have to sit and listen to the police talk for an hour and 45 minutes, and people wonder why the community was upset, I am absolutely appalled that the way it's been presented to the city council is that the community was the problem, not the DOJ, not the overpaid couple.
Again, I'm going to have to ask people not to interrupt testimony, please. Thank you.
And what I find really interesting is no one's talking about the overpaid Chicago consultant that continues to get his full salary, right? But yet the problem is the community members. But meanwhile, there would have never been a community report if the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform had not organized two community forums so that the community could hear what this overpaid consultant from Chicago had done. And so I'm just appalled that you're even contemplating removing the community's voice, not actually reporting annually on racial profiling numbers, who's being
Joanna,
stopped.
I am
wrapping up right
Thank
now.
You.
I want to end with, I have a copy of your promises, Mayor Wheeler. When you ran for office, you made some commitments to the community. And I just want to read a couple because I know I am out of time. But one of them was that we were going to have community policing. We were going to have police officers walking the beat and adding foot patrols. We were going to actively demilitarize the police. We were going to eliminate the 48-hour rule. We were going to embrace crime prevention through education by deploying cutting-edge and effective crime prevention, which uses education and engagement to mm-hmm. achieve results. This is what you promised us. This is not what we're getting. Thank you.
Thank you. Again, I'm going to ask people, please, not to interrupt the testimony. Don't. Please, let's just be respectful. Thumbs up, thumbs down. People can see it. 3 minutes, please. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Mayor Wheeler, or evening, Mayor Wheeler, members of council. I'm Dan Handelman with Portland Cop Watch, and Portland Cop Watch has numerous concerns about the three items on the agenda. We're equally disturbed about the content and the process that was used to propose changes to the deadly force policy, the settlement agreement, and the IPR. The city should not cheat the community out of time meeting for a meaningful dialogue about these crucial policies to meet deadlines for training officers and reporting to Judge Simon. The city would drop its writ to the Ninth Circuit and concede the judge can call extra conference hearings. He could rule on the changes being proposed in early 2018 rather than trying to rush things through for November. And item 871, it's good Mayor Wheeler stepping up to challenge the DA's interpretation of the Supreme Court case about compelling officer testimony, but the politically brave thing to do would be to require compelling testimony right away and then let a legal challenge play out, not write a draft policy and ask the court to weigh in. Receiving an opinion could take years or it may not happen at all. Moreover, the draft says compelled interviews have to happen within 48 hours, and as you've heard, the community's calls for it to happen within 24. There are other issues with the force and deadly force directives, which suggest council should not allow these policies to go into place. Also, the police association contract needs to be revised to allow IPR to conduct independent investigations of deadly force cases, including the ability to compel officer testimony. This would create the firewall between the criminal administrative investigations that you're seeking. Item 872 about the agreement and the replacement of the COAB. PCCEP reminds us of a Monty Python sketch where a pet shop owner tries to replace a man's parrot with a slug, and the man is told it doesn't talk, so he yells, "Well, it's hardly a replacement then, is it?" The first order of business for COAB was to independently assess the implementation of the agreement. That clause is struck from the new agreement. Then PCCP is allowed to host forums by the compliance officer to take community input, but the guidelines do not suggest PCCEP can comment on implementation. Moreover, having PCCEP meet behind closed doors will generate the opposite result of what the city is seeking. Instead of building trust with the Bureau, it will create mistrust and contempt. The BHUAC already meets behind closed doors, as does the Police Review Board. If you want to build relationships, stop cutting the community out of important discussions. It's outrageous the city is putting its own interpretation of why COAB failed into the cover ordinance. The worst offending part is in paragraph 46 that says criminal behavior became a regular feature of COAB meetings. Really? By the city's admission, one key issue was the failure to give adequate training, but it was poor facilitation by the facilitators that helped lead to the development of COAB, and that will not be fixed by the new structure. And as Joanne hinted, the main focus being on community engagement makes it seem like this is a civilian public relations arm of the police. We've made dozens of recommendations for amendments, and only one or two of them are being addressed today. And regarding the IPR change, our main concern is that we hope that IPR being able to propose findings will not create an argument that CRC should not be able to hear appeals anymore just because there's more eyes on it.
Thank you. Perfect timing. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor Wheeler, members of the City Council. My name is AJ Mendoza. My pronouns are he, him, and his, and I'm the racial justice organizer at Basic Rights Oregon, the state's largest LGBTQ policy and advocacy organization. The LGBTQ community knows well what it's like to be the target of police raids, violence, abuse, and profiling, which is why we continue to stand with this coalition on this issue of police accountability and transparency. The mistrust and fear our collective communities have about our criminal justice system is based on real experiences and a long history of misconduct from a system in desperate need to change. This mistrust will not disappear until we deliver an open and transparent process around police accountability. And we recognize that this process can be painful and uncomfortable, and that's democracy at work. The process of openness, transparency, and inclusion will go a long way toward building the trust the community needs in the criminal justice system. So on behalf of Basic Rights Oregon, we join our partners in asking the City Council to, one, open the membership to the Citizen Review Committee to members of the community in order to increase transparency and community trust. We would also ask to see it expanded to a membership of 11 to 15 members to better reflect the diversity of the community. We also would like to see the proposed 48-hour rule shortened to 24 hours. It is vital that officer testimony is collected as soon as possible following the use of deadly force by police, and it is a national best practice to conduct administrative and criminal investigations at the same time. We would like the Department of Justice to stick by the agreement that they made to the community. We appreciate the work that has been done towards progress, and those who call Portland home deserve better. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
Thank you.
The next three are Jan Friedman, Jason Renaud, and Lindsay Burrows, and they'll be followed by Barbara Bishinsky, Carol Landsman, and Peggy Zabrowski.
And just for the record, and there's no reason anybody would know this, but we will be announcing tomorrow there are actually six new foot patrols that will be deployed starting in August. The question was asked, whatever happened to community policing? We've actually been working aggressively on that, and you'll hear more about that tomorrow. Good evening.
Good evening, Mayor and members of the commission. I'm Jan Friedman. I'm an attorney with Disability Rights Oregon. I've also been on the advisory board for the Portland Police Bureau's crisis intervention team training since 1999. We're, as an organization, a member of the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition, and we agree with what the doctor said so eloquently here tonight. And I'm also a member of the Portland Police Bureau Behavioral Health Advisory Committee and have been on that since the inception. So what I'm asking you to do is to slow down and to allow adequate community involvement. You can call it community involvement because, well, we sent out this many emails and we got this person who responded. That's not adequate. I mean, this is a big issue. We had the U.S. DOJ make a finding, and it's not just a finding, it's people's lives. People with mental health issues have been subject to a pattern or practice of unlawful use of force. These are people in our community. So you can't just handpick 5 to 7 people and not have people involved and think that that's community involvement. I attended some of the COAB meetings, too, and I saw incredibly dedicated people trying really hard to get their work done. I also saw them be submitting like 52 recommendations and wondering, why aren't we hearing anything? You know, they just go out into the air and then nothing comes back. That's not oversight. That's not engagement. That's not getting the community on board. It has to be something different. As you've heard, I'm sure, over and over, in the mental health community, it's nothing about us without us. And you haven't done your work of including the people with mental health issues, people with disabilities, and people who are interested in this issue. I didn't really hear about it. It never crossed my desk. Nobody asked me, and I've been part of this organization for a long time, and I've been part of the police bureau for a long time. So let's see. Also, as you know, the Behavioral Health Unit Advisory Committee is not subject to public meeting laws, so people can't show up to that. I've asked for it to be. There's been a sort of group of people who think that it should not be subject to public meeting laws. So then there's minutes and agendas. And from what I'm hearing about this new group, maybe also not subject to public meeting laws. Now, how is that including the community? It's not. I mean, it's just not. You can't pretend that that's including the community. Maybe it's messier. Maybe it's harder. Maybe it's more difficult. And it's been that way for years for people in our community. And so to require that sort of engagement that's more challenging is needed. I mean, we don't want compliance with the USDOJ. We don't want deliverables. We want change. We want something to happen for people that's positive with mental health issues, and we don't want a continuation of unconstitutional use of force. Let's see. Oh, is my time?
Yeah.
I thought someone has the weirdest phone ring.
Yeah, it's definitely designed to be annoying.
Okay.
Thank you.
I mean, that's basically it. I could go on and on, but thank you for hosting this meeting and taking it seriously and recognizing that our community is large.
Very good. Thank you. We appreciate your testimony. Good evening.
Well, hi. I'm Jason Renaud with the Mental Health Association and the Oregon Law and Mental Health Conference. Mayor, Council, thanks for staying so late and listening to all of us. The proposal makes changes to the settlement agreement and it reopens the agreement, but it doesn't include the community in those change decisions. And it doesn't go far enough to fulfill the goal of the settlement, which is to rebuild trust between police and people with mental illness. My suggestion is to repair and not to repeal and replace. The COAB failed because of city-led management and not because of its inherent structure. There were problems with the structure, but those were not what caused the COAB to be criticized or to fail. Poor management led to mistrust within the COAB, and then which led to mistrust by the community members. Police brutality, it's a hot issue. Don't think people are going to be calm and reasonable. That wouldn't be a good management decision. So I think there's 4 distinct problems with the proposal. 1, public meetings, doing public business, that's a non-starter. I can't endorse private meetings doing public business. 2, the proposed plan knocks off independent assessment to the agreement. That's no good. Others have spoken about this and will speak about it. 3, too few people are involved. It's fair to say that 5 to 9 people are not representative of Portland, so there will be discontent because of representation. Review what you're asking volunteers to do. even with new management, we're going to be back here in a year asking why items have been ignored. It's too much work, and volunteers will end up relying on staff, and that's not community oversight. Four, exclusive mayoral control gets the council off the hook. The council needs to stay engaged, not as monitors, but as legislators. And that's because the DOJ won't be here forever. We're going to have to take this on ourselves, and this is a continuing conversation, really never ending.
That's right.
Please understand, harm to people with mental illness is not really a Portland problem. Most people killed in the Portland metro area, that's Clark, Clackamas, Washington, Multnomah County, I think 71 persons in total, 89% were in a mental health crisis of one sort or another in the past decade. So it's not just a Portland problem. It's not exclusively a police problem, because those persons came in an acute crisis. It's a multi-governmental, multi-system problem where the state, counties, sheriffs, police chiefs, DA, parole and probation, community mental health, and addiction health providers, as well as community members, need to be part of the solution. And the sooner this council comes to understand that this is a systemic problem, the sooner your people will stop killing my people.
Thank you. Good evening.
Hi, my name is Lindsay Burrows. I'm here representing the Portland chapter of the National Lawyers Guild, pronouns she, her, hers. I have a brief prepared statement, and I'm happy to answer questions. The NLG wishes to express serious concerns about the policy changes that are before you today. The policy changes are too numerous and have been public for too short a time for meaningful community input this afternoon, evening. We ask the city to take time to reflect on the community feedback presented today and postpone the issues to a later date when they can be more thoughtfully considered. Speaking first to the proposed compelled testimony ordinance, the NLG has provided a detailed legal memo to you, and we strongly urge the city to immediately adopt a proposal requiring compelled testimony within 48 hours of a deadly force incident.
Can I ask you a question about that?
Yes,
because
please.
I would like your professional opinion on
yes.
that. So, I understand why you're asking for that,
yes.
and I understand the effect of it, but if it results in an indictment being dismissed, how would you and others react to that?
Our position is that there is an extremely low chance that an indictment would be dismissed. So the problem with the DA's analysis of the issue is that the Court of Appeals has decided it. So the DA is saying, Commission, the Court of Appeals is wrong. I support the mayor's effort to get a legal ruling on the issue, but in the interim, I think we can all agree that the Court of Appeals has decided it, and we should say that the Court of Appeals is right.
And so what we are being told is, by you and others, that you want us to take that chance because you think it's a low risk.
We've been taking that chance.
Correct. But we're also being clear to the community that it is not without risk.
I think that's absolutely right. I mean, how many indictments have been returned?
That's the
issue here. The administrative interview has to happen because in some cases it's the only oversight of the issue, and it's the risk that the prosecution wouldn't go forward is such a low risk, especially because we have the Court of Appeals telling us that the remedy for an Article 1, Section 12 violation is use and derivative use immunity, not transactional immunity. Soriano is an entirely different circumstance where a statute granted, and you know that our full legal analysis goes through it, it's complicated. What I'm saying is, let's go with the Court of Appeals analysis. Former Chief Justice Paul DeMunis authored that opinion. The DOJ supported the ultimate decision in that they actually proposed the interpretation that we're advancing in that court case.
That could not have been clearer, so thank you very much.
Thank you so
and
much.
It's 6:30, and that was extremely clear, and I appreciate it. And so specifically, you're asking us to take the draft policy that would otherwise be held in abeyance until a ruling and simply implement it?
I'm saying let's compel officer testimony within 24 hours and seek a court ruling. But in the interim, let's not wait around for the criminal prosecution to be over to compel testimony.
One of the items, I believe, before us is the draft policy, but it would not be in effect until a ruling. Are you satisfied with that draft policy?
I'm not sure. My position is the the testimony needs to be compelled as soon as possible. The problem with the draft, as I understand it, is that it allows the DA to make the decision about whether the compelled testimony should happen. I think, as a rule, the compelled testimony should happen as quickly as possible, at the very latest within 24 hours.
This will not be counted against your time, but I appreciate the fact that you...
That's our main point. And I also want to note that the ACLU of Oregon has submitted written testimony supporting our legal analysis of the transactional immunity issue. With regard just to the other two ordinances, we would... with respect to the proposed ordinance seeking to modify the settlement agreement, the city's proposed changes remove two necessary components of successful police accountability, community oversight, and public transparency. The NLG wholeheartedly defers to the expertise of the AMA coalition on this subject and supports their position. Regarding the proposed IPR modifications, the NLG would like to see a more significant change toward truly independent investigations by the IPR. I mean, the IPR maybe should be the entity conducting the administrative investigation, such as the power to compel testimony. Ultimately, no deadline or agenda should be important enough to rush forward with the policies in front of you today. These policies will greatly impact the lives and well-being of our community members, which means the proposals deserve careful review and complete analysis. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
The next three are Barbara Boschinski, Carol Landsman, and Peggy Zabrowski. And they'll be followed by, we're on number 10 now, Mr. W.G. Barnett, Brandy Dieterle De La Haas, and Lightning.
Good evening.
Good evening.
Good evening. Thanks for staying.
Thank you for your patience.
Okay. My name is Barbara Boschinski with Portland Cop Watch, and we have process concerns. Portland Cop Watch is concerned that the city sought to fix COAB a year ago by suspending that board's activity for 2 months. Rather than come up with a plan, the city let COAB dwindle from 15 members to 5. Finally drowning in the bathtub in January. The cover ordinance indicates that the city, PPA, DOJ, and AMA coalition were involved in discussions from late 2016 to early 2017 on replacing COAB, but then the city used confidential mediation sessions in the Ninth Circuit to continue those discussions without the coalition per paragraph 59. Paragraphs 58 and 62 show that the AMAC asked to be included but was denied to do so until January 14th, just 2 weeks before this plan was released. That is not enough time to digest and debate such an important matter, especially when the members of the AMA coalition allowed into those mediations weren't allowed to share information with the community, and that includes a member of CopWatch who couldn't ask for feedback from the rest of the group. It is not clear why the city believes that using a confidential legal process is a good way to create a community-based panel charged with advising the Bureau on how to effectively engage the community. It's frustrating that these agenda items were put forward after PCW and our allies asked the Bureau in early July for more time to review the force and deadly force directives, since 40 substantial pages were released on a holiday weekend with a 2-week deadline. Chief Marshman told us the Bureau and DOJ had spent 9 months working out the details, including their discussion with the district attorney about compelled testimony. Yet the DA's memo from late March suggesting the city delay compelled interviews and the IPR director's June memo telling the city that was poor policy were not released until after we and the coalition uncovered the new 48-hour rule in the deadly force policy. There needs to be more transparency, more open dialogue, and more time given for people who aren't paid to review these documents. And as far as the oversight system, PCW does not have strong feelings about IPR being allowed to propose recommended findings when they conduct independent misconduct investigations. We repeat that this should not affect CRC's ability to review cases and make proposed findings under the current or a future standard of review. For the agreement's requirement for meaningful independent investigations to take place, IPR has to be given the power to compel officer testimony rather than having police internal affairs order officers to answer IPR's questions. The new ordinance will allow officers' supervisor to return cases to IPR or IA for further investigation, which the PRB and CRC can already do. This could cause more delays, even though the goal is to streamline the complaint process. With all the ideas the auditor failed to put forward to council, our IPR is sneaking in a new code change to rebrand dismissals as its administrative closures. Perhaps this is to indicate that sometimes IPR conducts preliminary investigations before dismissing cases, but it seems like PR. Thank you.
Perfect.
Yeah. That is the that's definitely the standard to beat tonight. That was within half a second of 3 minutes. Well done.
Well, let's hope I can be somewhere as close to that as she is. Hi, I'm Carol Landsman. I'm also with Portland Cop Watch, and I'm going to talk for a minute or two or three about the 48-hour rule, that gnarly 48-hour rule, which came into being because police authorities and police unions said that a police officer or anyone...
Excuse me, we lost the captioning again.
Sorry. We'll give you the full 3 minutes.
I'm not worried.
I apologize for that.
Restart the clock, please.
While we're waiting, if anybody's still in the overflow room, there's about a dozen chairs in the council chambers if you wanted to move over. Oh, is it? Everybody's out? Thank you.
Yes.
No. And captioning, are you there? Yep, she's there.
Caption.
They're there.
Okay. Thank you. Please go ahead.
As Sorry. I was saying, the 48-hour rule came into being when police unions and police authorities decided that an officer needed 48 hours with which to remember what had happened to him or her. Now, we all know or believe in our heart of hearts that that 48 hours is used to consult with their fellow police officers to get their stories straight. The PPA has been strongly against giving up the 48-hour rule. They tried to squelch COAB recommendation that it be done away with. However, when the city rushed last October to get a contract done with the police PPA, for millions and millions of dollars, the police were willing to give up the 48-hour rule. However, now we hear that, in fact, it's legally constrained. One of my questions is, I listened to the very knowledgeable city attorney and the very knowledgeable district attorney. They didn't tell you? I find that very strange. That nobody mentioned this before the contract was entered into. Anyhow, it's been 48 years since, it may never have been, it's been 48 years since a police officer has been accused of any act of violence against a citizen.
Indicted for
it. Indicted, thank you. So, we at Portland Cop Watch say, and let me get this straight, compel officers to testify to internal affairs. If they admit wrongdoing or refuse to testify, fire them. We have a 48-year rule, not a 48-hour rule. It doesn't matter. And make the police review board public.
Thank you. Good evening.
Good evening. I'm Peggy Zabrowski. I'm with Portland Cop Watch, among other nefarious groups. And this is another addition to the changes we'd like to see in the settlement agreement. The proposed changes to the settlement agreement do include one good item. The Citizen Review Committee, CRC, will have 90 days to hold hearings, not 21 days, and their time will not be counted against the Bureau's efforts to close cases in 180 days. CRC, the community, and even the council members raised this concern in 2012. But there are also problems with the proposed changes. New paragraph 69C codifies deferring to the DA under Oregon law about compelling officer testimony. It changes the rules for writing reports, including officers' reports and after-action reports based on the new directive. We are concerned that if the city really wants to find an alternative to the DA's plan, cover ordinances, paragraphs 7576, the revised agreement is going to make that difficult. The changes also create and limit a PCCEP to replace the Community Oversight Board, Oversight Advisory Board, including creating the cumbersome new name about community-engaged policing and removing the word oversight. Cutting out the existing agreement's description of a diverse membership. Assuming the new board will be selected, trained, and seated to meaningfully advise a new community survey within 4 months of the agreement being amended. Removing the requirement that meetings are open to the public. Some of the major issues PCW asked the DOJ and city to address but are not contemplated here are defining de-escalation as calming down a situation using verbal and physical tactics. The Bureau incorporates that definition, but also seems to think that threatening someone with a taser is de-escalation, or that moving from using a taser to using pepper spray. The first example is a threat, and the second is the abatement of a use of force. Explaining what a higher level of force means, since the force continuum has been dropped, as per old paragraphs 68 and 74. Closing the loopholes to use tasers in situations which do not present an immediate threat, as required by the Ninth Circuit. Loopholes exist for tasing handcuffed subjects, using multiple tasers on one person, or using the stun gun without a warning. These are all reflected in the new force directive, horrifyingly, and apparently outside of constitutional law. So, not good.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. And if there are people, are there still people in the overflow room?
No.
Okay, because I was going to say there's some seats in here if people wanted to come in. Thank you, ladies, for your testimony. I appreciate it.
The next three are Mr. W.G. Barnett, Brandy Dieterle de la Haas, and Lightning. And they'll be followed by Philip J. Wolfe, Joe Rowe, and Reverend Bill Sinkford.
I don't think Lightning's here.
Okay. Let's see. After my, how about we'll go ahead and go with Philip? Yes, we'll go with Philip. Yes. Yeah.
Good evening, sir.
Good evening. My name is Mr. Barnett, and I want to thank the citizens on the board before me, mayor and citizen council members, since we were all in this together, being a democracy. I think it bears no repeat necessarily, but to remember that democracy cannot exist without an informed citizenry, which really is a theme that seems to run through much of the testimony that you've heard this afternoon and into this evening. I am African-American, 40 years resident of Northeast Portland, and I have seen a lot of the dynamics that play between the citizens, particularly African American and Hispanic, and citizens, gay and lesbian citizens, and the police and the city, and it's been a real disturbing experience for me. But I'm not speaking right now from my own personal experience, but this is some of the highlights of concern from the Portland Cop Watches, which I'm representing at the moment. PCP remains opposed to creating a body to replace the COAB, which has no ability to review and make recommendations about the implementation of the agreement. The problem about appearing so late before you is many of the topics and issues that you're going to hear probably repeated has been, you know, addressed before. But these are some of the things that I was given to report on. I just have to agree with my colleague that spoke before me, which was that as compared to the COAB, the just very name of this new body, PCCEP, Portland Commission on Community Engaged Policemen, is a downer from the beginning. So that should suggest something. That should suggest something to somebody. Okay. One of the points was that the mayor would be picking all the members, meaning no community involvement, and the rest of the council will no longer have an investment in engaged police reform. And I think my buzzer just went off.
No, sir. You have 30 more seconds.
Oh, okay. Furthermore, I'll go down to the stop data, which is very important. It was previously shared with the now-defunct Community Police Relations Committee, will be shared with the PCCEP. But they are not being asked to help develop enhanced data collection, as the COAB was. Just another one of the indications of some of the... You got me now?
If you have a couple more key points,
I'll
you can go ahead.
I'll give some of my time.
Okay. One of the things is that the COCO will move back from semi-annual compliance reports to quarterly reports, but they do not have to cover all aspects of the agreement, even though the revised paragraph 159 doesn't say so. The cover ordinance, paragraph 80, indicates all aspects have to be reviewed over the course of a year. Also, the COCL does not have to give its reports to the PCCEP, as they did with the COAB. That's agreement paragraph 159. The COCL's town halls to present their quarterly reports will be created in consultation with PCCEP, but the commission is not expected to make comments on the reports, paragraphs 160 and 161. They are merely given as an option. They're merely given the option to host COCL quarterly meetings. Since the COCL has no connection to this community, it should not be incumbent on the AMAC Coalition for Justice and Police Reform to hold these forums. However, this duty should be required of someone. That pretty much sums most of what I had to do.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate your patience tonight.
Thank you very much.
Good evening.
Good afternoon. At least in Colombia, you can still say afternoon until it gets...
That's right.
My name is Brandy Dieterle de Los, representing the Human Rights Commission of Portland. On behalf of the commission, we'd like to express our gratitude for the opportunity to participate in the invited testimony regarding the Inclusive City Resolution recently. Up until recently, the HRC has been concerned with a lack in communication regarding the HRC's role in the DOJ settlement and especially in light of the disintegrating COAB. Our request to the mayor's office have gone unanswered for more than a year, and effectively leaving the HRC, the Human Rights Commission, sidelined, unable to participate. The lack of transparency was recently punctuated on Friday when, not through any memos or letters or meetings, but by reading it in the newspaper, the Human Rights Commissioners and the Department, the Office of Equity and Human Rights, OEHR, became aware of these changes and of the dissolvement of the COAB, the same time as the rest of the community. I would just say, as Joanne mentioned. Just a few comments we heard in our meeting last night brought from commissioners, heard from community members, community organizations. Mayor was elected on a police reform platform, and the sudden exclusion of the HRC from the proposed settlement agreement is jarring, resulting in an erosion of trust, confidence in police oversight, and confidence in the city's commitment to uphold the settlement agreement. The move to remove the HRC is perceived to be a move to control the conversation and attempt to control who is allowed to be at the table. These are perceptions that we're hearing from the constituents. In the current situation, we know that many communities are feeling abandoned, alienated by government at any level. So these sudden changes without sufficient public notice and involvement further victimize vulnerable community members. To reiterate, the HRC is formed to eliminate discrimination and bigotry, to strengthen intergroup relationships, and to foster greater understanding, inclusion, and justice. We urge you to consider how representation from an entity with such a purpose as the HRC fits into the PSEP and the amended settlement agreement's provisions. And finally, please consider what the proposed amendments and the manner they were formed communicate to the constituency, especially those from vulnerable communities, about the city's priorities and allegiances. Thank you.
Hello?
There you go.
Yes,
oh,
there you go.
Commissioner, thank you very much for representing the Human Rights Commission. And I just wanted to note that my amendments to have quarterly reports directly to the Office of Equity and Human Rights are intended to then, of course, the director would report to you and to the Portland Commission on Disability. So that was the intent, because I share your concern that previously both the Human Rights Commission and the Commission on Disability were mentioned in the settlement agreement, and I want you to continue to be involved, so thank you very much.
Thank you. I did notice that. Thank you.
Great. And I would just like to respond briefly. As you know, this was the process first of a facilitated conversation, which then led to formal mediation in the construct of the settlement agreement. And I can tell you that process, there's nothing public about that process. And as the mayor, I obviously didn't get to design that process or shape that process. That is a process that was determined by people beyond the purview of the Portland City Council. So now the real question here is input and inclusion, if I'm hearing you correctly, as well on the PSEP or whatever people want to call it. I'm always happy to have better branding advice. And I want you to know I'm hearing you, and I appreciate your coming today to express your opinion.
I just wanted to say that I appreciate your comments, but those comments I hope are directed to every person in the Portland area because that's what they need to hear.
Yeah, well, that's exactly right. I mean, again, there's sort of, you know, unfortunately or fortunately, I mean, some people see it as a positive. You know, I actually support the settlement agreement, and I support what's in the settlement agreement. But the process is actually a very closed process, and there are prescribed players in that process. And ultimately what happens is we go before the judge, and the judge either says, yeah, and the DOJ, you're either in compliance or you're not in compliance. So that, unfortunately, in this case, is the construct in which we're dealing. And I don't know if legal counsel wants to later on clean that up. She probably will. But that is the gist of it, and I just want you to be aware of that.
Yes, and I am aware. I just like to reiterate the last part, what your actions are doing are communicating to the community at large. That's me as a commissioner, a human rights commissioner, I can understand that. But just hearing the perceptions that are going around, that's very important. What are people
Absolutely.
Perceiving?
Yeah, and I do agree. I do agree with that. Thank you. And I appreciate you being here to testify. Thank you.
Hello. My name is Philip.
I'm sorry.
Okay. We'll see. Is it working?
What if someone trade and give you one of the lights?
Yeah.
This one. Sit.
Would you like to sit here?
I can't see him.
I just sit next to him. I'd be happy to move. Okay, thank you.
Okay. You said all right. Okay. All right. Hello, my name is Philip Wolf, and I was the chair of the COAB and COAB. And I would like to add just a minute of my time. I would like to read a letter, and then I'll sign it. So I'm asking if I could have a little bit more time because I have to look down and look at it and then make sure. So can I have one more minute of time to talk?
Sure.
Okay. So as far as transparency, the comment that I believe I wanted to clarify that because of the COAB, before I was the chair of that, and I stood strong with the COAB organization because I valued that experience with the COAB, and I volunteered full-time with that, and I missed one meeting of the whole 2 years while I had surgery. But anyway, so my heart was in the COAB, and I my comment is the COAB failed was not for a bunch of different reasons. It was because they refused to replace the vacant seats. They didn't replace them for 6 months, and we said we need someone to replace the vacant seats. And then as time got closer, the 2 years, they decided that they were going to be suspended for the additional amount of time, and then it got all messed up, which was not their fault. And I think the city was to blame for that, that they did not follow what the their compliance. And the DOJ found that the city was not in compliance. So that's, we already know that they did not follow that. And remember that we did volunteer unpaid full-time work, and that the city was paid full-time, and they were not in compliance. So who's the criminal here? Anyway, so I wanted to clarify those points from those comments made before. So I wanted to, let me check. As a straight person that's taking up the gay platform, I will explain about that's not representative of the gay community. Another perspective is a person that would take up the police reformation table. And my concern is when you want to take up the police, that I can only see your actions and I don't see the representation of what's happening so far. And having both of the investigations as a gay person and as a straight person taking up the gay platform, you cannot interchange those two. That you cannot have a woman that would take up the men's table, and so that would not be comfortable. So one thing I wanted to talk about is that I don't know if on the over 4,000 people were in the U.S. In 2013, as best as I can, with my understanding of the investigation, and I'm not exactly sure if it's right, but I did the best that I could, and to understand that 18 people were killed by the police here in Portland since 2010. And the U.S., there's 4,000 people that were killed by the police, and only 16 police officers were held responsible for that. 16 out of the 4,000 people that were killed. 16 policemen. In here, 18 people were killed by the police since 2010. And there has been no police being held responsible. Now, trying to wrap up my concerns about your proposal. Your proposal, the concept is, I know you mean well. And I understand the motivation behind your, with your proposal, the organization that's set up maybe would remove our only community oversight
for the community. And the organization would remove the committee, which leaves our mayor as the one who chooses the body of the organization and the only person who gets the reports. It does not conclude a fair representation for a hearing. And it displays to community members that the actions in the criminal behavior are they're not responsible for that. And I want to impress that the organization probably would remove our outside review process and instead put in an organizational control for the PR department. And lastly, it would close the door of discussions, and that has got to stop. We want to set up to make change and open the door and have community be involved. So I'm asking you to hold your proposal discussion until a later time that we have more information and that we can go ahead. So I'm going to ask if you could wait and to remove the 48-hour rule. So thank you so much. If you have any questions.
Thank you.
The next three are Joe Rowe, Reverend Bill Sinkford, and Isabel Sheridan. And they'll be followed by Jennifer Nicholas, Thomas Etienne, and Sarah Ayanna Rohn.
Hello, my name is Joe Rowe. Hello, my name is Joe Rowe. Is the caption working? No. Now it's going. I want to thank you all for having this meeting. I don't thank you for the rush timescale, and like most community members, I urge you to listen to them and the cries that this Dan is too rushed. It's much too rushed, Chloe. So we want less talking about amending the DOJ agreement and more compliance with the 2014 agreement. Who knows best that you are talking too much? Terrell Johnson and Quanis Hayes. I'll say it again. Terrell Johnson and Quanis Hayes. Too much talking. As Dr. Bethel said earlier, we know, I keep cutting out, but as Dr. Bethel said, we know how to vote. Don't pull a Steve Novick and vote to remove the oversight. If you remove oversight, you remove yourself from your office. The letter O stands for oversight in COAB. COAB. Travel back in time. The December 2014 contract did not predict that 3 years later we would see you in this room waiting for a Trump DOJ and strip the agreement today. Okay? Travel in time. 3 years ago, did we think we would be here doing this? No. The DA is saying that the Court of Appeals is wrong. Nick Fish asked Ms. Burroughs, the National Lawyers Guild, a question. In essence, Nick asked the lawyer, how would they sleep at night? Well, how do you sleep at night if you follow the sky is falling Rod Underhill and ignore the National Lawyers Guild? Okay, think about that. You have to weigh those two lawyers, the National Lawyers Guild or Rod Underhill. You ask me who I would trust? I trust the National Lawyers Guild. COAB or PSAP nominations should be stripped of the mayor monopoly, and the five council members each can appoint four members. How about that? I'm going to make a citizen amendment. Keep the contract we've got, ditch Wheeler's amendments, all of them, and convert the new COAB to 20 members, five from each of you. Okay? I urge you to stop talking about escaping your duty. Okay? The city staff have lied that the IPR has an exclusive oversight role. I urge you, like me, to read the DOJ. And on page 50, it says that the COAB has oversight. So please don't strip that out. You made an unconstitutional closing of balcony today. I've only got 35 seconds left, so I'm going to go to every time I speak, whether it's in Salem or here, it's 3 minutes, next person, 3 minutes, next person, 3 minutes, next person. And you ignore the public input. I've got to go home, but I urge you not to vote on anything tonight other than finding four members each and getting a COAB back into compliance and working so we can let community...
Thank you.
This is not acceptable to have a microphone that keeps cutting out.
It's fine.
Okay.
Yeah.
Please get us a co-op working into compliance so we can get the community to bring police oversight. Thank you.
Thank you. Appreciate your testimony. Good evening.
I'm Reverend Bill Sinkford of the First Unitarian Church. I want to thank the mayor and all of the council commissioners for holding this opportunity for community input as late as it is and as short as the time we're offered is. The most important thing that I want to tell you is that I am here and First Unitarian is here